Okay, so hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Fall Global. This is where we connect with global first entrepreneurs and remote work experts, talent acquisition leaders from all around the world. Our guest today is Giles Lewis, talent acquisition leader. Giles, thanks for joining us today.
No worries, thanks for inviting me on.
Absolutely. So, Giles, it is fantastic to have you on the show. And with such a rich and diverse background in talent acquisition across various industries and geographies, could you maybe share with us some highlights from your journey?
Okay, well, I spent this first 7 years or so of my career in executive search firms. Leadership hiring and executive search has been what I've been doing for the last 16 years. So I spent the first 7 years of that in search firms so that I could perfect the craft, really, learn how to run a classic executive search process, the research, the candidate engagement, the assessment, the interviewing, the stakeholder management, of course, is key. And that was very much UK focused. I then moved in-house and moved to Saudi Arabia to work for the oil company Saudi Aramco. They were setting up an executive search team there. So I thought that was an exciting opportunity. And my role there was really to lead on all the strategy around how we approach a search, how we go and find people, where we go find them, what our message would be to that talent. And that was very much on a global basis, absolutely fascinating experience there. I then moved to South Korea to work for a company called Coupang, which is their version of Amazon and a load of other things as well. A really interesting high growth tech unicorn company, which has now gone public. We were building a recruiting center of excellence there. So again, I was doing a role that was looking at how we find people, how we approach talent, you know, where that talent might be, who our competitors are, all that sort of stuff there. And that was on a global basis as well. Really interesting. I then moved back to the UK, worked for a company called Rotork back in the oil and gas and industrial space, where I ran executive recruiting for them on a global basis. And most recently, I've been at a company called Matillion, which is another tech company, a high growth consumption-based SaaS data company. Their mission is to get the world's data business ready as fast as possible. And I've been running executive recruiting for them. Hiring primarily in the US, in the UK, actually. Matillion is dual headquartered, so it has a US base in Colorado in the US and here in the UK in Manchester in Northern England. So it's been an interesting ride so far, 16 years in, and I'll be interested to see where I go next.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. And so you've transitioned from the oil gas sector, and in fact you did it a couple times as far as I understood. So given the current dynamics in the tech space, it seems more relevant than ever, for especially for talent acquisition professionals, to consider switching like industries. So how I would like to talk about that experience with you. So how challenging was it to move into the tech space after being in a completely different field?
So that's a good question. I mean, all of these are different, right? Every company is different. Every industry is different. I think the core skills for recruiting remain the same. I think there is a lot of mystique that talent acquisition and HR professionals and the industry like to throw up about, you know, tech is a mysterious space. It's very hard to break into. Actually, I think if you've got really strong experience in talent acquisition and you know how to acquire talent, you can apply that to a number of different industries, you know, relatively quickly. And actually, I think bringing a fresh perspective really does help sometimes. And don't forget that oil and gas itself is a high technology industry. I think people forget some of the exciting toys and technology that's going on in that industry now. And it is becoming increasingly software based too. For me, the transition was not that difficult. The oil and gas environments I was in were far more corporate than the tech environments I've been in. But within all work environments, there's always a little bit of politics, a little bit of ego, a little bit of cultural nuance you've just got to navigate through. But certainly, it keeps the work interesting, being able to move between different sectors. You've got to always be learning, and I think that's one of the ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, there are always like some nuances, right? So in comparing those two industries, like what are the advantages and disadvantages? for telecommunication leader working in those spaces?
Okay, so look, question. I think there's a lot of opportunity in both of those sectors for people working in talent acquisition. They're both a little bit unstable, I think, from a hiring perspective. I mean, if you think of oil and gas, it's very cyclical. Whenever the oil price goes down, there's a shedding of talent, and then we have to go back and hire that talent again. The knowledge transfer within that industry is really important because you have a load of people who are close to retirement, and this has been the case for many years. It's been called the Great Crew Change, whereby we need to work out how to upskill and bring in that next generation of talent within that industry. That's a key challenge there. But of course, within tech as well, as we've seen over the past year or so, there's been a vast shedding of talent within that industry too. So we tend to overhire within tech and then have to shed that talent. But the sentiment is moving away from growth at all costs, more towards profitability, which, you know, makes a lot of sense. But of course, now there's a lot of people within that industry who find themselves looking for work. So there's a lot of opportunity. There's a lot of money. There's a lot of interesting projects and exciting things going on. A lot of great people working in both those industries. But I guess the kind of cons of that is they're perhaps not so stable. You're kind of at the whims of the market a little bit more than maybe some. But certainly a lot going on. And within, there's so many of these small, nimble, scaling tech companies where you can come in as a talent acquisition leader and really build something quite interesting, build your own empire, build your own talent acquisition structure that's you know, leading edge. That's a real opportunity. Whereas maybe in oil and gas, it's a little bit more corporate. You're kind of working within a larger structure, so you probably have less of a free hand to develop things as you see fit. You're more of a kind of smaller cog in a larger machine, is how I'd see it.
That's interesting. Any plans to, maybe are you thinking of switching back to the oil and gas industry, or maybe you have some plans, you know, to try something new?
So, yeah, again, a good question. So I've actually just left Matillion. My role there is no longer needed, really, because we hired a lot of our senior leaders. I mean, right now, I'm open to what's next. I like learning. I mean, I like learning a new industry. I like being able to work with people who are really great people, who have interesting ideas and where there's something interesting we can do together. It doesn't need to be oil and gas. It doesn't need to be tech. But I do like high technology and then its application in the real world. I really enjoy that. That's really interesting about the industrial sector and oil and gas, and also the logistics technology and e-commerce work we were doing at Coupang. You can see how that amazing technology is actually influencing and having a place in the real world that you can touch and see. And I think that's really fascinating.
Okay, so as a talent acquisition manager, you've been like deeply involved in senior and leadership hiring like globally. That's what I understood. So can you maybe shed light on the unique challenges and maybe strategies you employ when recruiting for leadership roles on a global scale? What approach helps you to stand out in this competitive landscape?
So leadership recruiting is generally a longer form project and more complicated, I would say, than you know, regular recruiting. A lot of the time, the talent pools tend to get smaller as you go up the levels. So you need to spend more time at the front end, really defining what it is you want, understand why you want that, what this role is going to do, what problem it's going to solve, understanding where you need to go to find those skills and what the message needs to be to that talent pool. And you really need to tailor that a little bit more than you would do, I think, for mass recruiting. You can still make senior hires through inbound channels, so through advertising. You can still do that. But most of the time, I would say you need more of a proactive, targeted approach. And particularly for tech, in that industry, you know, it's incredibly competitive. The talent that you want is getting approached by everybody, probably through LinkedIn, through a number of emails, which are very difficult to differentiate between. So you really need to think about what your messaging to those people needs to be. And I think thinking internally, you really need to have a very close relationship with the person you're hiring for, your hiring manager inside your company, because it is a partnership. These searches are very rarely easy, and you need to work in partnership and iterate that search as you go through based on who you're talking to, what you're finding. if it's a really tight niche market, you might use a specialist search firm or a research firm, particularly if it's in, you know, a country where you are not on the ground there and you need to understand the cultural realities there. In terms of assessment as well, you need to think about how you're going to assess these people, because talent at the leadership level tends to be very practiced at interviewing. They interview very well. They're very good at getting themselves across. But really, you need to dig beneath that layer, that veneer, and understand really what's making them tick. And it comes down to the chemistry with the leadership team as well, and their buy-in to the vision and the mission of the company, their strategic outlook. These things become more important as you go up the levels there. And of course, I should mention diversity too. Diversity becomes more of a challenge as you go up the tree. There simply is less diversity in any dimension of diversity. And we really need to be cognizant of that and think about how we can develop that next level of talent, whether that's internally or whether we hire people externally and then develop them.
Yeah, and you mentioned, yeah, that you work with different regions, different cultures, right? So could you maybe share some insights or lessons learned from adapting your recruitment approaches in different regions, you know?
So good question. So if I think about Korea, for example, I mean, this is a huge question that would take a long time to answer. But if I give you a couple of examples, say, when I was recruiting in Korea and around that region, it's quite a different recruiting culture than it would be in North America or in the UK. In some ways, it's developed differently, or perhaps less developed in some ways. Things like search firms or agencies call themselves search firms. And job boards are more powerful than I think they are in the UK and in the US. People just don't tend to want to be used to being approached by a recruiter. They're not used to taking a cold call or getting an email. So you tend to work through search firms a bit more because that's how it's expected to go. Or you tend to build relationships in person, face to face, through networking events. You know, networking over a barbecue or something is something that can't be underestimated. And I think that face-to-face piece is much more important than it is in the UK and in North America. I think that's changing. When I was living there, 3 or 4 years ago now, LinkedIn was very much in its ascendancy, but it wasn't as actively used as it is in North America or in the UK or in some other territories, in Brazil, for example, as well. But I think that is changing rapidly. So you have to always keep abreast of what is going on in that geography. Your talent intelligence piece is really, really important. Understanding what the preferences are of the talent that you're looking to approach and engage with, but also what your competitors are doing and what the channels are that you need to reach those people. That channel mix is going to constantly change, and you just need to be very aware of that. Keep monitoring it.
And talking about from the practical perspective, what are the maybe top three tools that have been like a game changers for you in talent acquisition work? You mentioned, of course, LinkedIn, but there might be something else.
Well, I do think LinkedIn has become the dominant force within recruiting and talent acquisition. I mean, I remember when I first started in this world 16 years ago, LinkedIn was just one of a few tools you would use. But it's become so dominant now, I think you ignore it at your peril. Certainly for leadership hiring, it is the key channel. Something that worked really well for us, though, in Korea and in that region was events. Events works really well. Mm-hmm. Whether you're sponsoring an event and to build up, you know, awareness of what you're doing, and then you're networking through that event, or whether you're hosting your own events and bringing people in for, you know, chicken and beer evening or something, and then you can start to romance them over a period of time and build those relationships as you start to bring people into the organization and get them interested in what you're doing. But even around corporate events that you might sponsor, where you perhaps wouldn't think that a recruiting team should have a presence on the floor there at that event, you can use that event as an anchor point and then schedule a load of meetings with people, you know, ad hoc meetings, get to know you, chit chats in coffee shops and hotels, and then that starts to build the relationship. And really, that's what it's all about. It's about trying to uncover and connect with people outside of LinkedIn as well as through LinkedIn itself. I mean, it is the primary channel for this level. Job boards, though, as we've seen, still can't be ignored, and they still can be powerful for this level. And a well-networked agency or a research firm is also, you know, a very good friend to have in this world. If you find a good one, they're not all good, but there are some brilliant ones out there.
And you mentioned job boards, but for like leaders, I don't think that's like the main like a channel, of course, right?
So correct.
Yep. I'm just curious, what's been the success rate of using job boards and maybe LinkedIn job post in your talent acquisition efforts?
Well, actually, I've been consistently surprised by that. I always thought before I moved in-house, you're not going to hire leaders through job boards. But actually, I've been surprised by how many have been hired. I'm not talking at sort of senior VP, VP level. That's very, very rare. Not unheard of, but rare. Directors, senior managers, you can hire those folks through job boards, and you know they do sometimes apply. LinkedIn is pretty good for that, actually. Some of the other job boards are very, very variable, but through LinkedIn you can get that because you've got a lot of senior leaders who are on there actively moving around and networking through that channel and posting on that channel. So advertised selection can work quite well for senior leaders there. But even so, when you're connecting with people on LinkedIn, you're approaching them directly, you're talking to them, sometimes, you know, they'll then go and check out your page. You can have quite a good company page on LinkedIn now, and then they might apply to your job that through that route as well. So it can be quite good.
Okay, sounds good. And I should ask this, what about AI? Have you integrated AI into your talent acquisition process? And if so, how has it, you know, impacted your approach?
So I thought you'd ask me about AI. So I think we're at the start of our journey there. We can see there's a huge amount of opportunity in talent acquisition with AI. And I think a lot of people are starting to experiment with it. I think over the next 12, 18 months, we'll really start to see some exciting things happening there because we can already see how it will work. AI can take away some of the admin tasks that we have in talent acquisition, you know, some of the scheduling, some of the kind of the administrivia that sits around scheduling interviews and the more transactional engagements with candidates. But also it can be used to, I guess, to help craft job descriptions, help craft advertisements, help craft messaging, suggest a sourcing strategy. So you could say, you know, ask the AI, well, who are our competitors? Where might this talent lie? What is this talent interested in? How can we engage with them? But also for a job that you're looking to interview somebody for, you could use it to help suggest interview questions. You could use it to help create employer branding. There's all kinds of things that we could be using it for. It could be, you could have it proofread your messaging or your job descriptions, your advertisements with a diversity mindset as well. Is this really going to exclude somebody? Is this really an inclusive advert? There's so much that can be done with it. And I think it's really going to jump on in leaps and bounds over the next few months. And we're going to start seeing some really exciting things beyond just the automation and administrative work. You're really going to start to see some interesting things happening.
Yeah, and you mentioned this a couple of times in your role at your latest company, you've invested a lot in diversity and inclusion, along with like employer branding and like a talent intelligence, right? So how do you integrate these aspects into the talent acquisition process, and what impact they had on the company's culture and success in attracting top talent?
Well, so if I talk about diversity, inclusion, and culture, first of all, so Matillion has been a company, I mean, I'm not now working there, so I'm speaking as an ex-employee, but Matillion has always had a really strong focus on culture and values, and that's been really important to the business from, you know, when it was a few people in a room to where it is now as, you know, a larger company of 500 or 600 people. Those values are really baked into the way that the company operates. In fact, everybody that joins goes through an onboarding academy, which is amazing. And the values are the main focus of that week-long onboarding academy. So everybody gets a level set on that when they come into the business. And those values do encourage an inclusive mindset as well. But I think I think Matillion would admit that they're at the beginning of their journey with diversity, equity, and inclusion. I mean, I think most companies are. Any company that thinks they've solved that problem, or it's not a problem so much, but anyone who thinks they've solved diversity, equity, and inclusion and is truly an amazing company in that field, I think is telling you a lie, because we're all on a journey here, and this is something that is constantly evolving and changing, and we all can get better at it. You know, whether that, I mean, it's, there's no point having a really great inclusive process that brings in a really diverse range of talent, and then you find that the culture doesn't support that. Those people will leave. And we need to think about diversity from all kinds of angles. I mean, there is a tendency to think of it in, to only look at a few facets of that. So a lot of companies might only look at binary gender, for example, or they might just look at one other facet of diversity, whereas actually it's a huge universe there that we need to consider, because if you focus on one aspect of diversity, then you're ignoring others, and then that's, you know, you're excluding some. So it is a massive issue to wrestle with, and I think very few have solved it. Well, nobody's solved it, but very few are making real headway with it. I'm sorry, I can't remember the other parts of your question you asked, but I thought that was the most important thing.
I guess very good. Okay, so probably my last question. So outside of your professional endeavors, you have mentioned being like obsessed with music, art, travel, cocktails, films. It's maybe like every normal person.
Yes. So
have there been like at times when your personal interest really helped you, your way of leading, or made, you know, hiring easier? Maybe it helped you, you know, to connect better with candidates and you convince them to take the job. I don't know.
That's a really interesting question, Vit, actually. Well, one of the things I'm really interested in is travel and the world. Ever since I first left the UK, after I finished my master's, I went to Korea to teach English to preschoolers in 2006. That really opened up my eyes to the wider world. And since then, I've just been obsessed with getting out into the world and exploring different cultures and meeting different people from all different walks of life and trying to understand them. I do think that so within the UK, you can get a little bit parochial in your thinking, where you're not thinking beyond the island that you're living in. And that's probably not just the UK. That's probably people all over the world. It's very hard to get out of your country and kind of think globally. But I think it's becoming more and more important. And it's a real interest of mine. And I do think that helps me engage when I'm hiring talent all over the world. I may not really understand a lot of the cultures to begin with, or I really may not be familiar with, you know, people's backgrounds and everything else. But I'm really interested to learn, and I have a humility to the way that I approach things, and an empathy that I think really allows me to help to build those connections quite quickly. So, you know, working to hire people from Silicon Valley is very different than hiring people within Saudi Arabia or working with colleagues in, you know, Japan or in Korea. All of those cultures, those working cultures, function quite differently, as well as the kind of, I guess, the wider cultures they sit within. And having that genuine interest helps me, I think, work in that way. And I really enjoy that. The times when I've talked to candidates about cocktails or music or timepieces or something has been less, but there have been some times. And when you find someone that has an interest that aligns with yours, whether it might be weird jazz or something, you know, that definitely helps build the connection.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. I guess we're good. Thank you very much for sharing your experience on like a switching from one industry to another one, giving us, you know, this insights, how tech and AI are changing the game in hiring, and how your hobbies help you connect with great candidates. So wishing you all the best with your current and maybe next projects. Thank you very much.
I hope it's been helpful, and it's been a nice experience being on here with you. Thanks, Vit. All right.